Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 10, Deliverance of the Yama Arjuna Trees, text number 15. Daridra Niram Stambo.
Daridra Niram Stambo.
Mukta Sarva Madeha.
Mukta Sarva Madeha.
Kricham Yadrichaya Apnuti. Tadita Panuntapa. Daridra, a poverty-stricken person. Niram Stambha is automatically freed from all false prestige. Mukta, liberated. Sarva, all. Madai, from false ego. Iha, in this world. Kricham, with great difficulty. Radrikshayapnoti, what he gains by chance from providence. Tat, that. He, indeed. Tasya, is. Param, perfect. Tapaha, austerity. Translation. A poverty-stricken man must automatically undergo austerities and penances because he does not have the wealth to possess anything. Thus his false prestige is vanquished. Although in need of food, shelter, and clothing, he must be satisfied with what is obtained by the mercy of providence. Undergoing such compulsory austerities is good for him because this purifies him and completely frees him from false ego. Purport. A saintly person voluntarily accepts a state of poverty just to become free from material false prestige. Many great kings left their princely standard of living and went to the forest to practice austerity according to Vedic culture just to become purified. But if one who cannot voluntarily accept such austerity is put into a situation of poverty, he automatically must practice austerity. Austerity is good for everyone because it frees one from material conditions. Therefore, if one is very much proud of his material position, putting him into poverty is the best way to rectify his foolishness. Daridya dosha guna rasa nashi. When a person is poverty-stricken, naturally his false pride in aristocracy, wealth, education, and beauty is smashed. Thus corrected, he is in the right position for liberation. In the sixth canto, in the story of Ajamila, there is the verse, Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agam dunanti karsnenya niharam ivabhaskara, which says that there are various processes which can purify the heart, but only pure devotional service can remove the root of sinful desire from the heart. So, although austerity in itself is purifying, yagya dhanas tapascharva panavinam manisinam, it is said that even the saintly persons are purified by yagya, dhanas, and tapas, by performing sacrifice, by giving in charity, and by performing austerity. Nonetheless, austerity is not enough. Not enough to take away the sinful desire from the heart. So our process is not the process of austerity. It is not that he who gets up the earliest is the greatest of all. It is not he who is not drinking a drop of water on Janmashtami that he has the greatest bhakti. Austerity is rather not transcendental. Austerity is part of a support structure.
It is preliminary.
It is like plowing the ground.
Just it said that Balaram is the plow,
and Krishna is the instructor. He is Govinda who speaks and gives us instruction to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. So Balaram is preparing the ground. So some of the activities, such as yajna, danas, and tapas, are preliminary activities. Jnana and vairagya, these are preliminary activities. They are, in itself, not giving us love of God. One can perform all the tapas in the universe and still not come one step closer to developing love of God. That we should understand. But the tapas is there to free us from material entanglement. Material entanglement can distract us from devotional service. If we have too much to do with too many material things, then it may be difficult to engage in devotional service. Then tapas will help. Then voluntary poverty or renunciation will help. Otherwise, renunciation in itself is not adequate to develop love of God. In this way, we understand from the nature of devotion, where Rupa Goswami is giving the 64 limbs of bhakti, and tapas is not one of them. Is not vairagya is not one of them. Renunciation is not one of them. So we should be careful that in bhakti we are not putting the emphasis on austerity. Sometimes we get so much attracted to austerity. The shower cannot be cold enough. The alarm clock cannot be early enough. The fasting cannot be long enough and often enough. But the truth of the matter is, what really counts is the service that you do. It is service to Krishna. That is our saving grace. We may recall that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta wanted devotees to go out and preach, and that he sent out the Bengali devotees on Ekadasi also. He said, "Oh no, we cannot go, we are too weak." He said, "Why?" "Oh, because we are fasting." He said, then eat something. He said, "But go out and preach." And he said, no, but we have to eat rice. We have to eat rice. Because the Bengalis, if we don't eat rice, then we become very weak. Bengalis, you know. Every day, a COVID on a hill of rice. So they say, we have to eat rice. It's only Kadasi or no rice. Then Srila Bhakti said, okay, eat rice, but go out and preach. Of course, not that they actually took it as a license to eat rice. But they got the message. He wants us to preach anyway, because it's the preaching that is the essence. But just like Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada said that he didn't like austerity. That's very interesting. Prabhupada said, I never liked austerity. He didn't like austerity. But the austerity that naturally came in the course of preaching, that austerity, nothing was too great for him in that regards. In that regards, he would just take anything and everything. So this is the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya. I'll give some more proof. When Maharaj Prataparuddha was in Jagannath Puri, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had come to Jagannath Puri, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, as we remember, had taken the Lord to his house after he had fallen unconscious in front of the deities. And then, gradually, the time for Rath Yatra was approaching, and at that time, all the devotees of Bengal arrived.
And they came in a large group, which was organized by Sivananda Sen. And some devotees were from Bengal were already there. One was Gopinath Acharya, because he was the brother-in-law of Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, but originally he was from Navadvip. Therefore, Gopinath Acharya, he knew all the devotees from Bengal. Because he didn't have Facebook in those days, you know, and you could quickly look at who is who. No, it was simply Gopinath Acharya knew. So he stood on the roof with the king, on the roof of the palace, and they saw all the devotees coming, and Gopinath said, "That is Advaita Acharya. And that is Haridas Thakur." And he named all the devotees. And they were watching all the devotees. And then all the devotees, they went straight to the house where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was staying, the house of Tapa Misra. And the king said, "Oh, they're going straight to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They're not first going to see Lord Jagannath." They know that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is no different from Lord Jagannath. So they go straight. And then after a short while, many baskets of Mahaprasadam were brought to the place where all the devotees were. And again the king said, "Oh, they're not fasting?" Usually devotees were fasting the first day when they would come to a holy place. And then Gopinath Acharya said, "No, the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, they don't fast." They don't fast. So we see that even in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the emphasis is not on fasting. It doesn't mean that we are not fasting. We are fasting on certain days, like Jamashtami and so on. But that's not the essence. It's not that Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Jamashtami, Jamashtami, fasting, fasting, fasting. Today, Jamashtami, fasting, fasting. Jamashtami, fasting, fasting, fast, 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 fasting, fasting, fasting. Jamashtami, Jamashtami, fast, fast, fast. It's not that that's our meditation. Our meditation is Krishna. Simply, we are fasting so that we can be less absorbed with digesting, because too much fasting means also being too tired and then not able to really chant. So we fast and put the focus on chanting, on hearing about Krishna especially. And the funny thing is cooking. When I was new in Krishna consciousness, I was wondering, what is this? They're fasting and at the same time they're cooking the whole day. This is what a strange thing. What a strange thing. I could not understand it. And I think, why? Why they are fasting and cooking at the same time? Is it some sort of testing or austerity or something like this? I could not understand that, no, the essence is not to satisfy one's own senses, but to rather satisfy the senses of Krishna. So yes, for Krishna, we will cook the whole day like this. Anyway, here the Yamala Arjuna trees, they had previously been Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, the sons of Kuvera, who were very wealthy, who were born wealthy. And as a result, because they had all this opulence, they had become proud, they had become arrogant, they had lost the sense of austerity, they had lost the sense of respect for saintly personalities. And now Narada had cursed them and they had become trees. But they also got a blessing because they had become trees in Krishna's garden, which is sort of not a bad place to be a tree. Any of us, any time, would certainly choose to be a tree in the garden of Krishna. Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, they were blessed by this curse. The essence of the blessing was that they were getting the darshan of Krishna. But the preliminary purification included tapasya, included becoming trees, which is sort of limited, and in that way they became purified. So that was Narada's plan. First some purification. So in our current stage, where we are conditioned souls, a certain amount of austerity is necessary. It is necessary. Vairagya vidya nitya bhakti yogam siksatam ika purushartam. That vairagya is part of Lord Chaitanya's movement. It is part. All devotees are performing some vairagya, but always connected with service, not separated from service. We rise early in the morning. At the moment, I'm not rising early in the morning because of health reasons. Because Prabhupada said, first health, then sadhana, and then service. Right? So, okay. But normally, we rise early in the morning. But not just for the sake of rising early in the morning, but because it is Mangalarti. Because we are greeting the Lord. Because we begin the day by worshipping the Lord. Then we'll rise early in the morning. So our tapas is always connected with Krishna. Always. Tapas in itself, no use. Not much use. Not very much. But connected with Krishna, yes, becomes useful. Therefore Janmashtami, yes. Because then we will spend our time hearing, chanting, and serving the whole day. Madhava titi bhakti chanami. From these kind of madhava titis, from these days connected to Krishna, by then observing vows, we will get purified. In this way. In this way, we are relating to tapas. Rupa Goswami gives a warning. He said, one who is too much into austerity, and who puts austerity into the foreground does not get much benefit, because he says too much austerity makes the heart hard. It just makes the heart hard. So, anyway, too little austerity makes one soft. So, there has to be a balance. Prabhupada also said devotees should be ready to live more simple than the materialists. They should not require so many things for the senses, so many things for comfort. They should be ready to minimize the material needs and just be simple, so that there is more time and opportunity for devotional service. Because whatever you have, it may be nice, but there's a price attached to it. And ultimately the price, whether it comes into the form of money, will take our time and energy. Because to get money, it takes time and energy. So all these material comforts take our time and energy. And that takes away from Krishna. And therefore, we are by nature going a path of simple living, so that we have time and energy for serving Krishna. That is the main thing. Keep our time and energy for Krishna. And therefore, solve the needs of life in a simple way. But needs of life are there. Needs of life are there. Our meditation is to bring Krishna consciousness into the world. Our meditation is to somehow or other get the blessings of Krishna consciousness to spread everywhere, and to somehow or other design ways by which we can get everyone to become devotees. So, I have seen very famous Sankirtan breakfasts.
on Sankirtan parties, like incredible breakfasts, like, I mean, sandwiches with peanut butter and jam on top of it, and then a spray can with cream. And I've seen Sankirtan devotees just devouring those kind of things. And that's all right if we are out on the street, right, to distribute the mercy. We can drink a liter of sweet rice. That's okay if after that we do 6 hours of Harinam. Right? Then it's transcendental. That is what we see. Lord Chaitanya made his devotees eat enough for 5 men. He would personally serve. It is said, he would serve and he would make everyone eat 5 times what anyone can eat. 5 times. Eat. More. Even after they would eat the maximum, Lord Chaitanya would eat, make them eat more. So somehow, but then they would just have long, long kirtan and preach in so many ways. So this is our focus as a movement. Also bhajan. Bhajan must be there. We must do our own worship. We must do our own hearing. So some are worshipping deities. Some are reciting verses in the morning, every day. Some are really taking some time. Some are putting names of Krishna on the body with the tilak. It is mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion. So the Nectar of Devotion gives us 64 limbs of bhakti. And these 64 limbs of bhakti are basically giving us the path of bhajan, the path of worshipping Krishna. And it says one should circumambulate the temple, right? And at least 4 times, whenever the deity should go on procession, and when the deity goes on procession, one should follow that deity. So these are all parts of bhajan. So we must do our bhajan, undoubtedly. But more important still is preaching. Is preaching Krishna consciousness. Because even bhajan may not completely fulfill the heart. It is only when we are becoming merciful that we transform. It is that spirit of compassion that is the essence. Somehow or other, stop thinking about ourselves. Stop putting ourselves in the center. It's like, you know, everything is aham mameti. I and mine, the bodily concept of life, is very deeply, deeply rooted. Everything is I and mine. So it's, even in spiritual life, my devotional service. What is the most important word? My japa, you know? Yes. It is all about me doing it. Now I am chanting japa. I am chanting japa. Oh, yes, yes. Such a thing, you know, chanting japa. But I've been to several japa retreats. So I know how to chant. Yes, yes. I read also several books on chanting japa. So, you know, chanting japa. Yes. My japa. You know, you can keep a diary. My japa. Yeah. Underline my. My japa. My service. It's my service. Mine. I remember that in Vrindavan, we had a devotee whose name was Vibhu Chaitanya. And Vibhu Chaitanya, he was from Bengal, and he was an older man, and he had joined the Krishna Balaram temple shortly after the opening, and he became Prabhupada's disciple. And the first thing that happened was He went into the deity kitchen and he started cooking. And that's what he did his whole life. Basically, Vibhu Chaitanya was cooking everything, everything. Mangalartic sweets and all the offerings for the deities in Vrindavan. And that's a lot of cooking. Yeah. Everything he was cooking. So he was cooking from morning to night, just cooking, cooking, cooking. And when he was not cooking, he walked to his room and he would take some rest and then he would go back into the kitchen. And he never went outside of the walls of the Krishna Balaram temple. Never. He just walked from his room to the kitchen. And when I first joined, I was helping him sometimes, cleaning the kitchen and cutting the vegetables and watching the deity plates. But as the years went by, my service changed. His service was still the same. And he was still cooking. But I became the temple president and so on in Vrindavan. So then, one time, his health was going down. It was getting worse and worse. He was getting old. And his legs began to swell up, as old people have, water in the legs. And they've got huge legs. So he couldn't stand any longer. It's just not possible to be on his feet the whole day. He tried cooking sitting down, but then he was less productive. Right? He couldn't cook as fast. So it became impossible. Impossible. So he was sick and he was really unhappy. He tried a hospital, but that also didn't really work. So it was clear, the sign was on the wall. Right? The sign was there that you may not, in your old age, you may not be able to continue this. So one day I set him down and I said, "My dear Vibhu Chaitanya, I think the time has come that you now retire from this and that you take another service." He looked at me as if his eyes could burn me. I said, "What to do? What to do? Krishna gives, Krishna takes. What can we do?" He didn't say anything. I said, "We have discussed this among some senior devotees, and we think it is time now for you to give up this service and take a very simple service of serving the Vaishnavas by giving out the Charanamrita." I mean, in Vrindavan, it's a service. So anyway, 3 days he didn't speak to me. He didn't speak to me. And then he said, "Okay." And he did it. And then he got into it. And he sat down. And he had like lots of tulsi leaves so that he would have a tulsi leaf for senior devotees. He'd put it in their hand, you know, and then put some Charanamrita on top. So you always get the tulsi leaf. Anyway, for sannyasis, he even had a little cup. We would get not a spoon, a little cup. So he had it all organized, and he did this service till his final days. Meanwhile, there was another devotee. He was the Sankirtan leader. And, you know, there was a room which was filled with books, and there was a seat. It was a seat from a Sankirtan bus. And this seat from the Sankirtan bus was his Vyasasan. And he would sit on his Vyasasan, and he would give lectures to the Sankirtan devotees, you know. And sort of being Sankirtan guru, right? And then I came to him and I said, "Bhuvaneshwar, you know, you, while Vibhu Chaitanya was sick, you were sometimes cooking for the deities. And now Vibhu Chaitanya's condition is such, he cannot take up the service. Why don't you take up the cooking for the deities?" And Bhuvaneshwar Prabhu said, "Okay." As he speaks like this. "Yes, okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay. Yes." And he said, "Yes." And then he became the deity cook. And he never looked back to his Sankirtan Vyasasara with a tear in his eyes. No. He just moved on. And we could see, he's not attached, you know, he's not attached to the external benefits of his service. He just is ready to serve Krishna and to do the needful. And that is Vaishnava. That is Vaishnava. Where one can simply do the needful. Where one, that is detachment. Not that we are completely detached. We are attached to serving Krishna. We always want to serve Krishna. We'll never stop serving Krishna. If not one service, the other service. We'll continue our service to Krishna. But in this way, that not attached to the externals. If due to destiny, things have to change, all right, then they change. So like that, a devotee is different than a yogi. Because a yogi performs his austerities and his process is to say no. No sense enjoyment. No, I will not use any blanket. Winter or summer, I'll just sleep like that. So that is the mood of the yogi. But devotee is all right, you know. If you do so much austerity, then all the energy will go into the austerity. It may make you weak and tired. Yeah? So, okay, we sleep well, but then we preach. Then we have more energy, and then we do the austerity in the preaching and in our service. So that spirit is the spirit of the Sankirtan movement. Because we know Sansara Dava Nada Lila Loka Tranaya Karunya Ganakanatpam Pratasya Karunya Gunanavasya Mande Guru Sicharanarinda. That the whole world is on fire, in a blazing forest fire, and the people are afflicted by suffering. Nada Lila Loka. We must somehow or other do something and become rain clouds. We must become the rain clouds to put out by absorbing. Sandipani Muni, it is said, was like a mountain. The rain clouds came from the ocean of transcendental knowledge to Sandipani Muni and then came back down in the form of a river. So we must be like rain clouds, filled with transcendental knowledge, filled with the fruits of devotional service, and then rain everywhere. This is our business, to become rain clouds. So today we've had all night rain as a sign of, to remind us that we must also become rain clouds and rain mercy. I remember one Ratiyatra in South Africa, in a small town, smaller Ratiyatra. It was raining. And it was raining and raining and raining in buckets. It was raining bad. And at the beginning of the Ratiyatra, it was raining. So I remember I was standing on the chariot and I had to give a speech and it was pouring and pouring. And I told the people, I says, yes, it's raining. It is raining like anything. And it's Ratiyatra. And now we are about to go. But let us remember one thing, that the rain of mercy is bigger than the rain of water. And we went. And we went into that rain of water, and I tell you, fish were swimming past, you know. And we were dancing, and it was just, we went mad. We became transcendental. We were just flying in the rain and no longer caring for anything. And it was one of the most ecstatic Ratiyatras we ever had, right? Giving out that, and definitely that day, the rain of mercy was greater than the rain of water. So in this way, let us also become clouds and part of that rain of mercy. Thank you very much. Any questions? Any comments? Yes, Tamasi.
We were this year in
Woodstock. Right.
And then we went out with Ratha Yatra with Vedula Swami.
Yeah.
It also was raining.
Yeah.
And then one moment, Vedula Swami stopped the Ratha Yatra procession singing, and he put his finger up to the sky. Stop the rain! And the rain stopped. 2 minutes, the rain stopped.
Pranam.
To the lotus feet of Indrajula Maharaj. May the Lord forgive me all the offenses that I made to him in treating him like an ordinary person. Wow. Amazing.
Thank you for a wonderful lecture. And in this line, I would like to hear your thoughts on endeavor and surrender. It seems like endeavor is often something that we do externally, and surrender is attitude with which we do. And in my experience, sometimes endeavor seems to be an obstacle to surrender, because we take up many, many external activities that doesn't allow us to adjust the attitude with which we do this. Can you give some advice on that from your experience?
So a question on the internal aspect and the external aspect, and saying endeavor appears to be more the external aspect and surrender more the internal state of the heart. Of course, the things go side by side. When I'm endeavoring, my heart is with me also. When I'm out there and in that vein of water and my feet start to freeze and in my soaked wet shoes, it's not only involving my feet, it also involves my heart at that time. So the heart is with me, and so somewhere along the line, that internal element of surrender would also come into play. Still, surrender is not just a simple black and white thing. If it is not a matter of I'm not surrendering or I'm surrendering, an on and off switch, right? Now I'm surrendering because I am here. No, there are many degrees of surrender. There are many levels of surrender. And ultimately, sometimes they say that one has to become the servant of Krishna with every fiber of our existence, with every little aspect of our existence. See, yes, I'm surrendering. Yes, I'm doing this service for Krishna. Maybe, but maybe also a little bit for name, fame, and glory. Yeah. Prabhupada used the competition element in the book distribution. Sankirtan scores, number three, number two, number one, bang, 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 woo-hoo, number one, won the marathon, woo. It's a competition. So the competition element shows that there is maybe some other motive in us, that we need this competition, that we still are kind of driven by this. Why? Why not just without numbers, just give everything we have? Why do we need that whole thing? Number 10, number 9, number 8, number 7, number 6. Why do we need competition? So it shows that in us there's maybe still something else. So this is the problem. That although in the endeavor externally we are surrendering, internally we may still have ulterior motives. Mixed motives. So this is the problem. And gradually we need to become purified, until our surrender is complete. Still, I remember that one Gaudiya Vaishnava, sannyasi, senior, said about Prabhupada, we should not look only at Swamiji and his external achievements. We should also look at his depths. Yeah. And, well, I would say, in response to that, I would say that the mountain of his external achievements equals the hole that he has dug in his depth. In other words, the height of his achievements equals the depth of his surrender. It's clear, in Prabhupada, we see, we see all his achievements, all the temples, all the books, all the devotees, everything he did. If we look at all these things, we can appreciate his depth also. That's where we see the depth also. A Vaishnav can be known by how many Vaishnavas he has made, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said. Or Chaitanya Charitamrita says, the Uttama Adhikari, the Uttama Adhikari, He makes so many Vaishnavas. So in this way, there is a correlation between achievement and death. On the level of pure devotion, there is no difference. But in the conditioned state, the endeavor is external, and the surrender inside is not complete because of mixed motives. And we need to purify these mixed motives till it gets anyabhilasita sunya, devoid of any other desire. So that's our business. And Rupa Goswami teaches us how to become anyabhilasita sunya. Therefore, all these things, if you look at the 64 limbs of bhakti, and what do you see when you analyze them? You see that they are all engaging the senses. They're all engaging the senses in different ways. And in one lecture, Srila Prabhupada explains, he says that when we are attached to sense enjoyment, we cannot just ignore the sensual platform. We have the sensual platform, the mental platform, the intellectual platform. You cannot just, when the senses are attached to sense enjoyment, you cannot just go to the intellectual platform and meditate on Krishna and think and analyze Krishna. No, you have to also engage the senses, because we are on the sensual platform. So we have to work with the senses. We have to work with the mind. We have to work with the intellect to purify all these levels. So in our surrender, we have to bring all these things back to Krishna. All these things we stole away from Krishna. The senses, the mind, the intellect. We have to bring the senses back to Krishna. The mind back to Krishna. The intellect back to Krishna. All of them. Then the 64 limbs of bhakti are designed, or they are basically aiming at engaging all these levels in the service of Krishna. In that way, we will become anyabhilasita sunyam, free from all other desires. bounce the ball around for you.
If you allow, it's just sometimes this endeavor gives also rise to pride. So I'm the doer. It's kind of facilitates this mood, which is so contrary to position.
Pride is already there. Pride was already there from the onset. You know, Anadir Bahya Mukha. Since time immemorial, we are in the Bahya Mukha, in the external world, the world of pride. So we're always proud, constantly proud. And only sometimes there may be a little bit of humility coming through. The sky is always covered with the clouds of pride. And sometimes a little hole in the clouds and some of humility comes through. So, humility, good luck. You know, it's very hard to develop humility. But let us do service. Let us do service. Because that is the way. That is the way. If you try to control pride by some intellectual adjustment, good luck. I am not going to be proud. And then I'm so proud that I'm not going to be proud. Yeah, it is so hard. Yeah. But service, hard work in the service of Krishna, endeavor. And say, I'm so proud of my endeavor. Yes, that's true. But at the same time, that endeavor is intense. So I'm proud while endeavoring. But don't forget, it's intense also. It's not so easy, huh? You know, all this service. Whew, it's hard work. So it is purifying. And it may be a bit proud, even at the end. But meanwhile, it is purifying. And one thing that I know is that I learned now that I'm, you know, getting older. One thing I learned is that it's not only that we are purifying ourselves by applying ourselves to the process of bhakti, of devotional service. Oh no. Krishna, through life, makes arrangements to purify us. And he will do all kinds of things. Just when we are getting comfortable and everything is nicely arranged for bhakti. Here's my Krishna, my picture, there are my books, and here's my prasadam, and here's my japa, and you know, Vaishnava, Tilak, everything. He pulls the carpet from under us. And everything falls over. Everything. You know, just like that. Those are the moments that one becomes a little more humble. You know, like the young Arjuna. And it will happen to us also. At the time of death, or at the time of a great crisis, everything just taken away in one moment. In one moment, it's just taken away. Bang, gone. Then all you have left is your real spiritual advancement. You know, all you have left in a crisis, when everything is taken away, all you have left is the real Krishna consciousness inside. And it goes like that. And if nothing happens in your life, nothing ever, I said, and everything is sweet, then you get it all at the end, at the time of death. Let's see. Some get one snack, get another one, they're the lucky ones. No. Yeah. So when I got shot in the back, someone asked me, aren't you angry with Krishna? I said, no, why should I be angry with Krishna? Rather, I'm grateful he gave me special attention, special mercy. I said, wow, you call that special mercy? Yeah, special mercy. Those who live happily till the end of life, in a nice fashion of life, their pride, if there's any left, will all be cut at the end. Intense. So Krishna will cut it somewhere or other. That he would. Are we finished?
Please tell us why Krishna said that the most dear chapter of Bhagavad Gita is, I forgot, 13 or 14.
No, I don't know. I don't know.
I was also amazed when I heard this.
Yeah. No, I don't know. But I read something, but I can't remember it actually properly. But Baladevi Jibhushan in his commentary gives an explanation about the chapters, and there's a progression in the chapters. And I forgot which chapter he identified as the most important. But he explains how each chapter is more important than the previous chapter. They have the first six chapters are the introductory chapters. Then the six middle chapters are the essence of bhakti. And then he explains how the seventh chapter is more important than the previous chapters because it explains devotional service. In the eighth chapter, the objective of that devotional service, Krishna, is more described. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo. In the ninth chapter, there is more, the most confidential knowledge is described. And it's still more intimate, describing about the nature of that devotional service. The tenth chapter begins to, after the devotee has become aware of the more finer standards of surrender, then the 10th chapter describes the opulence of Krishna. In this way, I remember Baladevi Jibhushan describes a progression, but I can't remember how it goes on after the 10th chapter. So that's why I can't answer your question in full, only partially.
The most dear, not important, but the most dear.
Yeah, I cannot remember. He describes it. You read it, Baladev. That's where the answer is. But I forgot the exact conclusion. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granta Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.